This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark Wong Xiaoning and the ray of sunshine that is Kusu Chuang,
who
has joined us in studios. Welcome, Chuang.
Good morning, ladies. Good morning. Good morning.
As usual, you bounced in with your rich sneakers.
Rich sneakers. I was a big fan of Erwin Sarigar, henceforth the rich shoes. And dancing. Don't forget dancing.
Are you a dancer, Chuang?
I am a dancer. You know Michael Jackson?
You must show us sometime.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us, nevertheless. And so this morning we are here to talk to you about all the business stories of the day. But first, a look at the market. So the US stocks eked out modest gains overnight after investors were digesting a slew of earnings reports from some of America's largest companies, including Dow Components, Caterpillar and Boeing, shares of which rose despite both companies reporting weaker than expected earnings declines.
So the Dow closed 0.2% higher, the S&P rose 0.3%, and the Nasdaq gained 0.2%. So eked out, I think, is a correct nomenclature.
Meanwhile, in Asia, most stocks were actually down as revenue warnings from U.S. chipmakers Texas Instruments raised worries about the global tech sector, as well as uncertainty over Brexit. As a result, the Nikkei rose 0.34. They defied gravity. But the rest of the markets were down. Shanghai dropped 0.4, Hang Seng plunged 0.8, Kospi closed lower 0.4%, Singapore Straits Times fell 0.5%, and the KLCI slid 0.3%.
So for some analysis on global markets this morning, we have on the line with us Tony Nash, CEO of Complete Intelligence. Thank you for joining us, Tony. Now, the Bank of Japan may be lowering its forecast for economic growth and inflation later this month. So is the country at risk of reverting to the lost decade, which it experienced in the 1990s, with both deflation and stagnation affecting the economy?
That's a good question. I don't really think that's the case. In the 90s, Japan had a lot of zombie banks and zombie companies that were real drags on economy and bad debt that they hadn't resolved. So we just don't see that environment right now in Japan. Some of the bigger issues for Japan are the fact that China's economy is slowing dramatically, and China really is the driver of Asia's economies. So as China slows, you know, we look at, say, exports from Korea and China and those slowing dramatically, we look at their economy slowing, it really has a lot to do directly and indirectly with China's change. So I don't really see a return to the 90s for Japan.
Meanwhile, Tony, stateside, the U.S. earnings season has started positively, but this has mattered to you more in terms of you and all the fund management industry, or does the ongoing trade war have greater influence on market directions at this point in time?
Well, the trade war, it seems that a lot of the kind of bad news around the trade war is already kind of baked in unless things get dramatically worse. But, you know, we've already seen the cutoff of, say, ag. We've seen a lot of the, say, investment move to or moving to, say, Vietnam, Mexico, Thailand, other places, Malaysia. So some of the drama around the trade war has already passed through. So, you know, we're seeing earnings relatively positive, somewhat moderate, but relatively positive. And that seems to be a bigger influence. We haven't really expected equities to perform extraordinarily well in this quarter. So, seeing things eke out gains or losses, you know, that's really kind of within our expectations.
Meanwhile, we look at all, prices have been on the soft side. Do you think this trend is going to persist? Because normally prices start creeping up in October when the Northern Hemisphere countries get colder. Or is this seasonality trend going to be nullified by weak global demand?
Yeah, we really see the latter. It's not just global demand, it's ample supply. So there's quite a lot of supply. We don't really have supply shocks on the one side. We don't have massive demand on the other side. In fact, we have active slowing in Europe and China, in Northeast Asia, and so on and so forth. So, the U.S., although the U.S. is still growing, it's slowing as well. So we're not seeing dramatic growth. We see crude staying pretty moderate within a band, and even slowing down a bit more over the next few months. We do see an uptick, a sustained uptick come back probably in about February. But for the next few months, we expect things to be fairly subdued.
And Tony, over in China, the world's second largest economy reduced holdings of U.S. treasuries for a second straight month. So from $1.103 trillion in August down from $1.10 trillion in July. Should we be worried? And does this have any impact on the U.S. dollar?
We're not worried. The treasuries, the treasuries that China holds, now they could sell them all and they'd be snapped up within a few days by global pension funds. So, we hear a lot of worries about what if China sells its treasuries. It's actually not a valid worry. There is a market for those. What it tells me more is that China needs those dollars. So when we see activities like this, we have to wonder why they're taking this action. And China actually needs those dollars. There's a lot of U.S. dollar denominated debt by Chinese companies, SOEs, and so on and so forth. And those dollars, China's dollar short right now by to the tune of about $500 billion. And that is growing every single year. So we expect some of these sales have been to get U.S. dollars in order to pay off debt.
Thank you very much, Tony. And that was Tony Nash, CEO of Complete Intelligence, talking to us, among other things, about the U.S. earnings season, which let's get into that this morning, because Microsoft posted quarterly sales and profits that topped analysts' projections, and this was lifted by demand for their Azure cloud computing programs, as well as internet-based versions of Office productivity software.
Well, in fact, all three of their business divisions exceeded expectations, and this comes on the back of them reporting fiscal first quarter profit of about $10.7 billion, let me just repeat that, $10.7 billion per quarter on revenue of, and again, get this right, $33 billion. So that's 120 billion ringgit in just 3 months. And that's how big this guy is, right? Up from $29 billion a year ago. So they've just basically increased top line by $4 billion in 12 months, right? And this is a company that used to be on the verge of, you know, being left behind. And they just turned the corner. So they closed at about $137. And they're now worth $1.1 trillion. And that's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Well, their share price has gone up 35% on a year-to-date basis. That's a phenomenal increase.
Isn't that right?
For a company this size. And I mean, like you say, Chuang, 5 years ago, people thought they were going to be left behind, right? Because there was this shift towards cloud. And, you know, they're just more known for their office software. But they've been really clever because the whole idea of hybrid is, I think, something that companies want. They, you know, some companies still want the security, but they're a little bit nervous about just going, you know, full cloud. Full cloud. So Microsoft has really tapped onto this kind of a niche, like a very clever spot in the market. So I think, you know, and on top of this, you're talking about a company with net cash of 55 billion US dollars.
Yeah, well, that's about a quarter of what Apple has. So go figure, right? And that's really a lot.
Nevertheless, still larger than the GDPs of some countries. Mm-hmm. And so the other big name also that was in the news over their earnings was Tesla, which unexpectedly turned a profit. And they also saw their shares soar more than 17% in post-market trading. They posted a profit of $342 million and said that they're confident they can exceed 360,000 deliveries this year. Of course, on the downside, revenue did decline year on year for the first time since 2012.
Well, in fact, what I read is that they actually delivered 97,000 cars in the quarter ended September 30th, which is a company record, but there was still less than about 305,000 cars that they were expected to deliver. So on an annualized basis, if they delivered, like, say, 400,000 cars, right, there would be twice as many as, give or take, roughly twice as many as Peugeot delivers in a single year. And that's just from one car maker for one, you know, basically year. And that's a lot.
Okay, I have to say I'm not a fan of Tesla. I think the valuations are still...
It's crazy.
Yeah. A lot is riding on the success of Elon Musk, the man himself, right?
And a lot of their sales depends on countries that give them tax breaks and basically electric vehicles. Subsidies, like Norway, for example, or Hong Kong, for example.
But he's very clever in that he sells this whole branding, if you ask me.
He sells the future, basically.
Yeah, it's like the Porsche of EVs. You know, you aspire to buy these vehicles because it's just so cool, you know, and he knows how to exploit that.
Well, the Model 3 and whatever, right, they don't look like $1 million, though. I mean, he had a chance to redesign and rethink the electric, you know, the vehicle. He didn't. They just look like really badly designed Priuses. They do, right? Don't you think?
Well, I mean, there was some concern that some of the models would actually cannibalize demand for each other, right? Because they were somewhat similar and released not very far apart.
Yeah, kind of. But then the way their price point put together, they're not exactly fight each other, but they can do some amazing things. I mean, they can out drag a Porsche 911 Turbo, even an Aventador, for example, right? So. Not that you know any of this.
No, I'm looking at you blankly.
Just blank looks all around the studio.
Yeah.
My thing is like put the petrol in the car and then press the accelerator. It moves. I'm like happy already.
This one got no petrol. This one you just press and go. Yeah. Squeeze and point and squeeze. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Meanwhile, it wasn't just all good news on Wall Street because Caterpillar also disappointed with its first decline in quarterly profits since 2016, and they blamed it on economic uncertainty. So you can clearly see on Wall Street it's a bit of a mixed day sometimes.
And of course, Boeing is profitable again, but nevertheless, the 737 MAX crisis is still a major problem for their financial results. So we will be watching these very closely, as I'm sure no doubt will you be. But right now we have a few messages coming up for you, and then we'll be taking a look at some local stories. So stay tuned here on The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.